Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, darlings. I have to be relatively quick here. It's one of those days where I just don't seem to be able to get away in the nicest way. I don't seem able to get away from my children. I'm currently hiding in Mickey's room. Sometimes it's like I've got a massive magnet in my pocket and the kids just follow the magnet. So, how are you? Hope you had a good week. I've had a really exciting week, actually. It's been really nice. There was quite a lot riding on it because I did this session for Radio 2 called the Piano Room Sessions. And lots of other amazing artists have been doing it all throughout the month of February, and I just didn't want to be the crap one at the end. And I also wanted to really enjoy it, but also I was doing my new single, which is called Breaking the Circle. I was singing that for the first time live, and I was also doing a cover of Madonna's song Open Your Heart, so I wanted to kind of nail that. And hang on a minute. Yeah? All right, darling, that's sweet of you. Thank you. That's my 7-year-old trying to wake up my 18-year-old and him going, "Mummy, I just told Sonny he can have a little bit more rest," which, given that it's 11:45 on Sunday, is quite something. Anyway, the performance for the Piano Room is at Maida Vale, and it was with a live full BBC concert orchestra, who sound phenomenal, and all my band. And I had Ed Harcourt, my friend Ed, join me on piano, and he's the guy I've written my 3rd album with. And so it was all very, very special and very familial as well. My brother Jack was playing drums, my husband's on bass, Ed's wife Geeta is doing BVs, and Ed's sister-in-law and Geeta's sister Amy had done all the string arrangement, the orchestral arrangement. That's quite a lot to get your head around, isn't it? Plus it was with Ken Bruce, on Ken Bruce's show, live on his radio show, and he was very lovely. So anyway, it went really well, and I just found that like such a high that like lasted me for a good sort of 48 hours of just feeling really great about the fact that it'd gone well and I'd enjoyed it so much. So that was really nice. I recorded a couple more podcast interviews for you, and I also participated in a podcast for Care International, because I've worked with them before. The woman who I think she's director, so Helen Pankhurst, and yes, she is of the family lineage of the famous Pankhurst, Emmeline, Sylvia, founder of the Suffragettes, of course, Emmeline. So we spoke to women around the world who've been facing challenges and how they've dealt with it in their local communities, and that was incredible. I'll let you know when that comes out, actually, because it was a really good podcast to do, speaking to these incredible people. Anyway, so that's been my week, and now I find myself, it's Sunday, and tomorrow I go away on tour. I leave tomorrow night to go to Europe, and I'm away for 10 days, actually, so quite a long one. I haven't even started packing. I haven't done anything. I'm going to do it tomorrow when the kids are at school. But it's quite serendipitous in terms of the timing that I have that on my mind, because actually I spoke for this week's podcast. I spoke to Jessie Ware, and she and I spoke a lot about that thing when you go away on tour and you're kind of in that tour bubble, and how you get quite indulged. You don't really have to think about very much apart from the gigs in the evening versus family life, when your time for yourself tends to diminish drastically. And I think after speaking to her, it's made me feel even more excited about going away because I don't want to waste being away, you know, feeling guilty and worrying about everything. I actually want to really enjoy it. I'm going to be able to sleep in, guys. I can't wait. I'm still really good at that. I'm going to get so much sleep. It's going to be sick. And I'm also going to just have lots of that time where I go off by myself during the day, wandering around foreign cities. So I've got Paris and Brussels and Amsterdam, Cologne, Hamburg, Berlin, Warsaw. These are all the places I shall be visiting. And I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be lovely. And I can't wait to see everybody on the tour. Anyway, it was lovely to speak to Jessie for this week's podcast. We've been sort of synchronising diaries for a while because obviously she's does the same sort of silly job as me, so we found it sometimes quite tricky to find a time, but it was all good. Went round to her house. We've met a few times now, and I've been on her podcast too, and we've got mutual friends in common, and she's just really lovely. Lots of talent, lots of generosity of spirit, nicely cheeky, good fun. So yeah, I will leave you with Jessie and I, and look at this, silence. I'm just going to let that sit for a minute. No one's calling out for me. Beautiful. See you in a minute. Thank you very much for having us over.
Thank you for schlepping and getting off at the wrong train station, which always buggers people up. Many of my loved ones have done this, gone to New Cross instead of New Cross Gate, and it's a schlep.
It was a lovely run.
Yeah, along the main road. Yeah, really, it's beautiful as well. The scenic
just
route.
That slightly sweaty run you do when you've got like a bobble hat on and gloves and stuff, mate. And your puffer jacket. You're like, I was quite pleased. I shaved 11 minutes off my predictive arrival time. So I felt quite good about it.
I was flipping nimble
this morning, Jessie. I really went for it.
Oh, man. Thank you. Well, you don't need to get on the Peloton or do, you know, no, run later.
It. Done. Today is all about talking to you, then relaxing. And I have to say, I'm a little bit disappointed because I heard, Rumi, you're messy and you're not messy at all. Your house is really tidy. What's going on?
I am really messy, and there's a reason why it's really tidy. I just have a really amazing new nanny who is like obsessively clean, and I am
not
complaining.
No, I'm very messy as well, by the way. And I've experimented with tidying, and I've realised it makes me feel worse. I actually don't like it. I don't like it if my bedside table is free of books and stuff.
I agree with you.
I like it.
We're not Kathy Bates in Misery. We're creatives.
Exactly. Creative, messy creatives. So when I was... Obviously, we've met a few times, but when I was sort of reading up more and more about you, I realised... Oh, Carl, I'm lovely.
Sorry about
hopefully...
Okay.
That was so nice and politely sorted. We have quite a lot in common. So before I sort of freak you out with the level of detail, I want to start with a really nice thing. We both have had our first single from our new albums played on radio this week. So my first song was played yesterday.
Congrats.
And same to you, because you had it today.
So. Yeah, like about an hour ago.
I know, and I've heard it, and it's brilliant.
Thank you.
This is the song Pearls from your new record. So tell me everything. How are you feeling about it? What's this bit like for you before you release
stuff? It's that funny thing, isn't it, that I was just kind of complaining to you about, where you're like, it was a new song, which I've been waiting to put out. But it was also the announcement of the record as well, and all those blooming pre-order links and stuff, and you get like the thing where you're like, oh, people are liking the song, oh the pre-order link is not working, oh, management, what are we gonna do? And then it's like, it's just, it's so silly, all the kind of logistics, and it takes a village to get a song out, you realise.
Yes.
But yeah, it's really exciting. It feels kind of like, I don't know if you felt like this yesterday, you can sit back and, not that I was nervous about what people thought, because I'm really proud of the song, but there's like that release that you're like, okay, let's celebrate. Like, we just did put another record. We survived another year as women in music.
Very true. And it's that lovely feeling of like, okay, now I'm ready to introduce it to the world. But then I always get as well a slight apprehension, because I like the bit just before I release it, like maybe the day before.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Like Christmas Eve.
Yes. Very excited, but I haven't also got like what people think about stuff. And so I've got that kind of nice like little protective bubble.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy that.
Yeah.
And also, I don't necessarily want to know the end of the story, like, i.e. how it went. I'm a massive optimist, so in my head it's always like, it's gone amazing until I release stuff, and then it's like, then the reality sets in.
Do you look at kind of reviews or comments or...?
I don't go too heavy with all that. I don't know. Reviews, no, I tend not to.
Me
I think
neither.
I used to when I started. I think I read everything. Mm. And then you have to pretend you don't. You have to pretend that you're not reaching any of that stuff, but... Yes, and then now I'm a lot more settled in myself and what I'm up to. But I think it's just that feeling of like, yeah, letting a bit of daylight in on something that's a little bit magical and, and you've been quite protective of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I get excited. And then there's always the bit where I think, oh, this means... Because obviously when you're songwriting, you can be quite predictable in your days and your weeks and what you're up to.
I love that bit.
Me too. Because then there's the bit where you know you've got to go out and about and do promo.
I'm dreading that bit.
Well, I think it's hard when you've got little children.
Yeah.
Because the other thing we have in common is we both have had three babies in our 30s while we're also making music and releasing things. Mm. So it's a lot to get on with, I think.
It's also that thing of, it was really funny, so they did like a few billboards around London before the album was... announced, and I was at like a school kids party on a Sunday, and I said to one of the mums, oh, yeah, I've got new music coming out, because they know what I do, and she went, hang on, I've just seen your face on the billboard by Queens Road Peckham. I went, really? Is it out? She went, oh yeah. And it was just like, it's kind of that weird thing where you go from being pop star and this silly kind of fun glamour dress up to then being like, being mum, which I adore, but it's that I'm finding that juggle and kind of wearing two different hats and being able to... I found it really hard when I came back from tour in November till I was so excited to see the kids, and they'd come out and seen me like 2 weeks prior to me coming back. So I'd been away for 6 weeks. I'd managed to get them to come for 2 weeks. So we had 2 weeks on either side, or 2.5 weeks on either side, which is quite long and not particularly nice. But I was having a lovely time, but I missed them. And I was so ready to come and see them, and they were so ready to see me. My eldest was really struggling with me being away. And I came back and it was like, right, yeah, let's go. Let's be mum now, of course. Like, no more people carrying my bags, opening doors for me, asking if I need tea, asking if I need a massage, asking, you know, all of that. Very lovely stuff that comes with kind of the stuff of touring.
Yeah.
But I found by the end of the year, I was just like, I kind of was incredibly confused which hat I, and this sounds really bad, but like which hat I'd not preferred to wear, because of course I'm, being a mother is the greatest honour, but I was finding it quite challenging after being completely looked after, and I hated myself for finding it challenging, because of course parenting is challenging, but it's also amazing and I'm lucky to do it. But the guilt that came with that, the guilt when I was away, I felt guilty that I wasn't, and then when I came back I was like, oh, I'm kind of missing tour. Like,
yeah, because also when
it's a bugger
when you're on tour, you can basically revert to like being a teenager pretty
yeah.
much. You can, someone will just basically take care of everything,
and like you can go out and like go to sleep past 12 and then wake up and not do the school run. And actually,
yes.
I like doing the school run, actually. But, you become a teenager or, like, a student at, like, uni, where you're, like, watching box sets in the day because...
Because you can.
Yeah, and you've got, like, a gig at, like, 12 o'clock at night or something. I don't know. It's really bad, isn't it?
No, I think... I think I used to feel probably worse about that before we had the bit, you know, the 2 years, which I'm... everybody's a bit bored of talking about, but that bit where I realised that actually all those bits in between the work and the home were really important for my head. So now when I go on tour, I'm better at saying, giving myself permission to sleep in and rest and focus on the gig. I think when I'm away, people quite often say, oh, have you brought all the kids? Even though, what, you know, if you're like miles away, it's like that was very impractical. You know, all the extra flights, the extra space, the childcare, everything. I'm like, no. But the very fact that that it's been asked of me, I feel immediately like, are there people that would have done that then? Have I made a bad decision?
I know. It's, if we were at the level, it was funny, there was a really nice person, I probably shouldn't say who it was, that I met when I was in Buenos Aires, and she was so sweet. But, and I was saying that I was missing my kids. Boring, at like a cocktail party. But woe is me, tiny violins. she went, babe, next time just like bring the home tutor and bring them. And I was like, babe, what planet are you on? I can't afford a bloody 5 flights to bloody Buenos Aires. I can't afford another tour bus.
Mm.
I can't afford a home tutor. What are you talking about? So I think people are just...
It's well-meaning.
It's so well-meaning. And
but it's financially impossible. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've really buggered it by, you know, the fact that we've got more than... two, even like our car situation. Sam always said, once you have 3 or more, it's like a different car. It's a different amount of hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And
it's
true. Yeah, we've made it quite expensive.
And also, I wonder as well if you'll look back, because I think, because yours are little, so you've got 2 at primary. Well, one at primary, one at preschool, back to start primary, same age as my youngest.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And then a little one, so how old's your smallest?
He's 18 months.
18 months, that's still very little. And I think... Do you think you'll look back on this period of your life and just feel like, whoa, there was a lot
going on? Yeah, and I worry that I will again feel guilty about the fact that maybe I didn't, you know, I can feel the baby slipping away in the sense of he's a big boy now. Like he thinks he's a big boy. He's talking, he's trying to roll with the older ones. Mm. And I believe it's probably up my last baby, and so in some respect I'm trying to cling on to him being the, I guess that's what happens with the youngest, right?
Yes,
you treat them like the baby. Yeah, I mean, he's called the baby.
Yeah.
I worry I'll be full of regret that it was too much work, but then also I hope it's inspiring to them that they saw that I was here. And you know, I do feel, and I don't know about you, yeah, we have these really concentrated periods of when we're away or when we're promoting a record. That's why I was talking about all this, because we were talking about promo and how it changes from... But there's the majority of the time, unless I'm about to have a, like, international, like, hit or something, and everyone's going to want me to tour in every continent. Doubtful, but... That may be quite nice. We are able to be at the school drop-offs and the pick-ups, and maybe not every day, and maybe I'm out a few more evenings than other parents, but I do feel like, as much as I punish myself, I am quite lucky that I am here quite a lot in their kind of day-to-day. Of course, I'm their parent, but... You know, there's so many parents that work so hard and they have such grueling hours Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's... I feel sorry for myself sometimes, but I think also that's really hard. There's so many parents that have far more... Like, we long for the 9 to 5, we say, but actually maybe the flexibility of our jobs is actually also amazing and...
Yeah.
You know?
No, I think you're right about that. And also the thing I think about a lot is that our work is an extension of the kernel of who we are, like what makes us tick.
Mm.
And having that space to be creative and a bit other is pretty magical.
Yeah.
I love the fact I have that freedom. But how do you go about protecting your creativity and giving yourself that space?
Weirdly, I think that my creativity works quite well, kind of compartmentalized. So when I go, and I think that's happened from having children. So when I have my session writing with someone, I'm like, right, I'm going to work. I I'm going to try and create, and we're going to do something, and I'm not going to punish myself if it doesn't happen fully. But there's set times, and actually that's worked really well for me, which sounds really antithesis of kind of creativity, which you imagine is like incense at 3 a.m. and, you know, for me, it's really delicious. And I think it's because I crave that 9 to 5. I think I crave that 9 to 5, the idea of me going to work. Mm. I mean, I always remember Nick Cave talking about this and saying that he put on a suit every day, and I think his studio in Brighton was like up in the attic, put on his suit, go to work up into the attic. Mm-hmm. And like, I always love that. So yeah, I always kind of think of Nick Cave when I'm going to go and try and write a song. The creativity, you know, I had to do a work call for my live tour, and everyone was in all different places, Thailand, LA, England. So we were all on a Zoom, and it was at bedtime, and that's really annoying and inconvenient, but I did it. And I was allowed, the kids went to sleep, and we were allowed this like hour and a half of, you know, brainstorming the creative for the live show. And that was also really nice. So although I do the majority in the day, you know, there's moment I'm very lucky that I get to do it kind of all the time. And also I have the podcast, which I don't know if it's creative in the sense of like we eat food and we chat.
It has to be curated.
It's a different creativity, I guess.
It is. And also it's something where you have to, you know, have an arc in your head of what it is you're hoping to get out of the person you're with and make it count, because it can't just be a sort of woolly thing
but
of like...
Maybe, because, and you know, you have a podcast, which we're doing right now. The fact that it's less about you, for our podcast, of course, I'm sure Mum and I make it about us all the bloody time, but like, it's talking to other people, it's conversation, it's inspiring, it's... interesting. It's another form of creativity or conversation or outlet compared to the music, and that's really helped me too, to have wear these different hats.
I think it's probably obviously the podcast is brilliantly successful, and I've done your podcast and had such
you
a
did
fun
a live
time.
One and
I really
we
loved
had
it.
A really naughty audience and
it was quite raucous.
They were quite raucous.
It was good.
They
I liked
drunk.
It
yeah.
I know there was a woman at the end who asked me something like, how often do you and your husband have sex? And everybody kept apologising to you afterwards. And I was like, bring it on. I don't you, mind a tricky question.
You answered so perfectly. You said, enough. It was so good.
I was quite impressed with her. I mean, to stand up in front of a few thousand people and ask that, like, okay.
She was. Cheers
to you.
She was drunk. People kind of were like, ooh, aghast. Yeah, it was fun. It was, you handled it well.
I have my fan.
You handled it very, very well.
But that brings you to another thing that we have in common, because if you'd asked 15-year-old me what I wanted to do, I would have said journalist up there.
Really?
I was really interested in journalism. And that's something you thought about as well for you, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's quite interesting we've both found ourselves doing something where you get to exercise that muscle a little bit.
Totally.
And so what's it, you know, it's a question I'm sure you've answered a billion times. What is it like doing something like that with your mum? I can picture it with my mum, so I'm wondering what it's like with your mum.
You've experienced it with us. My mum is a force of nature. She's incredibly, she's a 71-year-old woman who has been... I'd say kind of pushed by me into doing a podcast. And I think I tricked her a bit. Actually, I didn't know. We did, but we started, we didn't know the podcast was going to be a success. And initially it was just, you know, come over to mine or my mum's and she's going to cook for us. And she's just going to hand us the food and she's going to bugger off. Absolutely, that wasn't the case. She's vital. But... it is amazing, and however morbid it sounds to say, I'm so thankful that I have all these kind of audible memories with my mum. I think that's magic, and I think I will forever appreciate that. Working with her can be slightly challenging, but that's just because, you know, I think I ask quite a lot of my mum by, you know, doing... sometimes we're doing 3 podcasts a week, which is like 3 dinner parties. Can you imagine doing 3 dinner parties while she's also been to work all day? It's too much. So we've kind of had to really balance it out and listen to each other. because as much as she enjoys the entertaining, she enjoys the conversation, it's exhausting for her.
Yeah, that's full on.
It's, we've kind of had to navigate that, and we're trying to be a bit kind of kinder to ourselves and slow it down a bit. There was a moment where I felt like we never stopped the series, and that was quite exhausting. So we're having a bit of a break now, kind of we're banking lots of podcasts, and then hopefully it won't be so... I mean, I came back from tour, and then we hadn't finished the podcast because I'd been away for 6 weeks. So then we had to do loads, and it was just intense, and it was not how I want to do it, and I want the podcast to carry on forever. But I don't think I was the kind of best by the end of last year. But yeah, it is amazing working with Mum. She's brilliant. I'm really proud of her. She's sometimes slightly too opinionated, and I think that's a 70-year-old woman having her opinions. But sometimes I have to kind of remind her that I don't know. Like, how old's your mum?
Mum is 67. Okay. Yeah, and so. I mean, my mum has obviously had experience of doing something that's in public eye. Mm. But for your mum, I'd imagine you also felt quite protective. I've noticed that dynamic shifting with my mum and I anyway.
Yeah.
As she gets older, when we go out and about, I feel quite protective of her.
I feel that less with my mum, weirdly, because she's kind of, I think she quite enjoys, like, the adoration she gets from some certain people.
Who wouldn't? Adoration's always welcome.
Yeah, it's fab. But I do feel protected. I think at the beginning when, like, articles come out or interviews and she'd be like, hang on, I didn't say that like that. And things are taken out of context. Because we do the podcast, which we are in control of and we edit, she was like, no, why? And she found it really problematic doing interviews because she'd say things and maybe not, you know how we become so conditioned to watch what we say in interviews because you know on written, like, word will just come out.
Yeah.
It will be misconstrued. So she had problems with that. And also the fact that she's a social worker, that she, you know, wonders whether how she can still juggle these when she is more in the public eye.
Mm.
Like, I think that's been a real battle, and I really respect her that she still works, and that's amazing. But also I wonder whether it's time for her to kind of stop that, but I wouldn't want it to be because she feels she has to. But yeah, I think my mum really enjoys it. She complains quite a lot, and I get that, but I do think she enjoys it.
And when you've got a guest coming up, where do you feel like you have to store the sort of information about them in some part of your brain?
I'm feeling really bad, Sophie, because I don't prep probably as much as you do. I think I usually we know we enjoy who's coming on because we've invited them on or they've been asked to do it, and we're like, oh, we've always wanted to chat to them, so we've got this understanding of them. But because it's this kind of dinner date,
yeah, you can,
it can go
quite,
anywhere really,
yeah, quite free flow,
and that's quite nice. But I do kind of feel like I'm the captain of the ship, and I have to steer the conversation to be able to kind of bring it back, because sometimes it can go so off-piste with mum, and that's what's brilliant about it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I kind of have to be the bore that's like, okay, and now it's time for your Last Supper. but that's okay.
I think probably every duo, whatever their relationship, who do things like that, probably have those little things they know about each other, about what they bring to it.
And like my mum's the one that's allowed to ask the naughty question because she's like,
she can get away with it.
And that's,
she's so
okay,
charming.
So I let her do that. And sometimes, you know, she takes it a bit far and I'm like, and she'll get away with it. She always bloody gets away with it.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you.
Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
I think I heard you say something like your mum brought you up with lots of love and lots of fun.
Mm.
Is that something that you were thinking of when you knew you were going to be a mum, about some of the things that you wanted to bring?
And I don't feel like I'm necessarily being the funnest mum yet. I feel like I'm a bit of a sergeant major all the time. Like,
I can't imagine that.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's been really... My mum always kind of took us to the theatre. Or like it was the Polka Theatre in Wimbledon, or
it
was
it's really sweet, that place.
Or the Unicorn, or like, you know, it was that. I just remember my mum always taking us to that, or like the Trocadero when Planet Hollywood just came out, or it'd be like she'd take us to these places, and she'd always have like, we'd always have like one or two friends with us. So it was like she was herding like a load of kids.
Because you're
in
one of
central London.
Three, right? So there's
one of three.
She must have liked that kind of busyness.
And also, she was a single mum. So I think she, maybe it was sometimes easier us having friends too. So we were squabbling less. We used to squabble so much. So I just remember mum always kind of having people over, always taking us on kind of trips or doing things, schlepping us to like North Wales after school on a Friday with like our mates and me vomiting in the back because I always got car sickness. And it was like a 6-hour, like she was doing that all on her own. And I find that quite
astounding. That's very impressive.
And I, you know, I've just had my husband come in to light the fire because I can't bloody do anything. But the fun thing, I feel like it's getting easier with my eldest two to be able to, I don't know, apply. I don't think I'm that fun, but I want them to have similar experiences. So, you know, I took them to see Anansi the Spider, a production of it at the Unicorn the other day, and my son hasn't stopped talking about it. So then I've like booked the Billy Goat's Gruff there, you know. And that's, I'm really loving that they're showing similar interests, but I'm probably imposing it on them.
It's hard though, isn't it? Because you have those memories and then you're never the same person your parent was, but you're partly a product of your environment and what worked with you and the things that didn't work as well. So I think you've always got that thing of like, what can I do that feels actually really natural to me? Because you can't just play the part of like, today I'm going to be so much fun.
Yeah,
it's going to knock your socks off.
I think I'm kind of regarded as like by Juno's friends as like, a nice mum, I don't know, that like feeds them well. I think food is like my love language, really. Mm. So
that's a very good language.
Even though they reject it and break my heart all the time, the bloody food. But
yeah, it's amazing how that can hurt when you've prepared a meal.
But I heard something yesterday that apparently a kid can reject something 15 times before they kind of accept it. But would you bother making spag bol 15 times if they go no?
That's like, agony.
So
also, like a little chart on the wall. Like,
yeah, I know, exactly.
We've got 9 more of these and then you're going to love it.
Actually, what are you doing for dinner tonight? So I've got some ideas.
What are we at? Thursday? I don't know, actually. We haven't had pasta for a few nights, so it's probably going to be pasta.
It's that one. It's like the little one that you can store.
It's rolled round. And also I've got that funny thing where tonight I've got a gig and I'm on stage at like 11:30. So I've got that weird thing where I'm sort of going to have to disappear into the night about 10 p.m, which I find really weird. So part of me quite likes it because it's like they go to bed and then I like get into my spanglies and then off I go. And it's
why
like,
is it so
like
late?
A superhero. I don't know. It's yes, I don't like
where
that aspect. It's like some private award thingy on the embankment.
We love a private.
So I'll just disappear.
11:30. How many songs?
Half an hour set.
But by like 10, you'll be like, oh, I'm knackered.
I was asleep by that time last night.
Babe, there's nothing better than getting to bed before 10.
I love it so much.
What time's your kids up? Like the first one?
The alarm goes. I get up just before 7 to start getting the eldest two up for secondary.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm the human alarm clock in our house, so I wake everybody. But if sometimes my youngest wakes up before that. So this morning, yeah, we were up from like 6:45. Fine.
Okay.
Up we get. What about you?
My daughter's usually the first up, and she wakes up her brother. So it's always. It's like she'll try and get up at 6:30. We tried the grey clock. It's absolutely not worked for us.
No, they just learn how to turn things off as well.
Well, and also, like, they don't seem to see that it's still blue. Therefore, like, stay in your room. They're just like, is it waking up time? No, it's not yellow. Yeah. It's like they just laugh in the face of the grey clock. I think it was a 6:30 jobby today. But then the little one is really good and he sleeps till like 7:15, but there's no, you're already up by that point, so those, that 45 minutes is lost. I'm really grumpy in the morning though, like I'm the one that can get up with them in the middle of the night. I'm like, I'll do that, I'll rot them back to sleep if they've been put, like I'll do all that one. But the morning I'm just like, it's not 7, don't talk to me. And it's so, I'm brutal in the morning, whereas Sam's always up because he's a personal trainer, so he's much better at the mornings.
Also, have you had it where you're going to do something like I don't know, working with something, you know, let's say doing something with a company for the day, and then you realize that everybody there is like much younger and none of them have kids, and so you talking about what's happening with your kids and what time they got, it's like a sort of foreign language. Everybody just looking at you like, yeah, that doesn't sound great, I'm not even thinking about that yet.
Yeah, you poor thing.
You did it to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So will you do the school run tomorrow or will Richard?
I'm actually not going to be there. That tomorrow I'm filming a video, so I'm going to be call time's 7:30, but usually it's me every morning for school run. I quite like it, actually. I like getting the bit where I walk them to school and I kind of, I should say, like, it's quite a lot of people who, majority of them don't seem to want to go to school, like, ever. Funny that, but I still quite like that sort of routine of it.
Me too.
And the walk. The walk.
And they always kind of love it. They love you walking them to school. I don't know, I feel like, you know, like sometimes my nanny would take them too. But when you're there picking them up, there's like this smile on their face that maybe it's just because they're sick of bloody being at school for the whole day, but it's like priceless, isn't it?
It is. And so this morning when your song was played at 8:30, were you out and
so
about?
That was a bugger today because I would have taken them to school today. But I don't know about you, but I had to film a TikTok of me listening to myself on the radio because apparently that's really great content. I was like, fuck
well,
yeah.
No one told me. And if they had, I would have got me, I was in the playground with it playing on my phone.
Oh, babe. See, you're better. That would have been a great TikTok, babe.
It's too real.
Content's too real. I didn't take them. I filmed myself dancing to my thing and cringing. So
we have such a funny job.
Oh, it's so stupid.
It's so much.
It's so stupid. That's really stupid.
Mummy, what are you doing? I'm working.
I'm working. And you're just like looking at your phone, filming yourself singing. I mean, yeah, it's stupid.
I know. When you're like, I have to do some work now, put it on the lips.
Yeah, I know.
Guys.
Exactly.
Can't wait to come and perform.
Well, I don't know. Exactly.
And one of them walks in and I give them this look like, you've just screwed up my filming.
Oh, man. Are any of them very interested in you putting on makeup? And then, did they, because like all my kids are fascinated by the makeup.
Yes,
ritual.
But my youngest also is just like, you're going out. Because I don't really wear makeup during the day, really. Like mascara, that's about it. But he, so as soon as I've got lipstick on, he's or anything, like, he's like, where are you going? And can I come? Because he's quite interested in all that. Because I think you took your daughter on tour with you.
My daughter on tour when she was 18 months, and it was quite challenging.
That's quite a tricky age, actually, because they really want to get out and about and move.
Yes. She wasn't speaking at all, and so she just said "da" all the time, which became kind of the entertainment for all the band. That was quite tough, and I don't think I was in the best headspace. And I'll kind of always really regret that because I feel like, I don't know, you know, you must have had a kind of some highs and lows of your career, right? And yeah, I just feel bad that like my daughter was not privy because she won't remember, but she was part of one of the low memories. Not her, of course, but her coming on tour should have been a really beautiful thing, but it was incredibly challenging and...
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah. So, but you know, we changed it all up, and this time they came and met me in LA, and they came, the two eldest, my daughter and my son, they came to my LA show, stayed up late, watched side stage to see what mummy does, and that was cool. So, you know, I'm trying to kind of rewrite the story a bit.
And she will never remember it, but I think there's something very significant about if you've been doing what you do before you have kids and then the bit after, and then suddenly the bit that you did before they were around feels like old news. So it's all about that new chapter and what happens now, and then you introduce them to it and you just want it to be really great. And if it's not, you know, feeling that, if it feels challenging, you feel like you're sort of showing them something like, oh, please don't see it like this. It's supposed to be more than this.
Totally.
It's, even if they're small, because you suddenly they're along for the rides, and you've taken time away from them to do the stuff and to get the work done and to write the songs. So you want it all to be like completely worthwhile.
You want it to be fairy tale, which is quite hard to do ever when, you know, when you've got kids, you never know what's going to happen. It's like you can try and go, this is maybe a really shit analogy, but like you can try and go for a roast with everyone out and it's probably going to end up a complete shit show. And that's okay. But the intention was there.
Yes.
But just, I think I was putting so much pressure on myself for it to be perfect.
And is this because, what was happening when you had your first baby?
I had this record that I'd made that was quite kind of autobiographical and struggling with the juggle of being a mum and a performer. And I don't think anybody really wanted to listen to that shit.
But you need to put those things out there sometimes.
I felt like I did, but it was kind of sad, and I think I was really low, and I felt this such urge to be a mother, but I also hadn't fully made it as a singer, so I wasn't in the most stable situation. It was, you know, it's very precarious. I didn't know whether I'd be dropped, whether, you know, and it was very kind of make or break. And then adding like that, I didn't have the podcast as well at the time, so it was, you know, music was my livelihood and a complete honour to be able to do that, but I wasn't enjoying it. It was taking me away from my daughter. I was like trying to do this perfect way of like juggling, and I just was really feeling like it was too much. And then, you know, it kind of, things changed label, changed management, changed just kind of, I had the podcast, things looked up, and I started to kind of forgive myself for this. Like, it was really, it was horrible though. And I think it was probably the closest I've been to kind of a version of depression if I've ever had it. And I just hate that my daughter's part of that narrative. That's what makes me really sad, because it's not her fault at all, of course. It's just really hard industry, isn't it?
Really hard.
And I think it is a bit of a, like, you do feel like you're kind of in a kind of a far more jovial Squid Game. Like, it's like you never know when your time's up. And actually, I don't feel like that anymore. I kind of feel like from the success of the last record, and hopefully the success of this new one, we'll see. Or even if it doesn't, like, I've got these different strings to my bow and I feel far more empowered and confident as an artist and a mother and a performer. And, you know, it weirdly kind of, I don't have the pressure on myself that I did before. I mean, you carry on, you do it, you keep on going. It's like, it's, you're a real inspiration. You've done it, but also you were so, I think also, I actually really remember like you being very pregnant and performing and you being, you know, the tabloids being really obsessed with your pregnancies as well.
Particularly the first one. I felt
Why
like...
Why were they so obsessed with the first one?
I think I think our view of motherhood has got more positive now. And yes. I think people are much more open about, you know, just the talking about the other side of it and how it can work for people and the bits that are tough and finding, you know, community with it. But when I was bringing up... This is when I was... When I was bringing out my baby, when I was bringing out music and having my first, firstly, the timing was like pretty, not probably what you'd write down on paper because I found out I was having a baby when I was just releasing my first single from my second album. Oh. Sorry, it makes me laugh, but it was actually really stressful.
And this was a different time with music.
Yes, and so I just had Read My Lips, which had been this big successful album, which I wasn't expecting. And Murder on the Dance Floor and Take Me Home and all this. So I was like travelling all over the place. And then I was like, ooh, I've got something to tell people that I know is going to completely change like everything.
Yeah.
And
did you feel scared about that?
Okay. I thought like, I mean, I was really, I look back on it with a lot of fondness because it was when Richard and I just got together as well. Mm. So it was like all about like us finding ourselves as a couple, and also we were always a family. We were sort of three almost from the beginning, and like that felt very precious and exciting. Mm. So I was very excited about the new beginnings, but I also felt really discombobulated about me and what sort of music I should be making, how I was performing. Mm-hmm. Just who was I? And I didn't really feel at that time that there was many contemporaries that I was like, oh, well, they've got kids and they're doing it.
Yeah, you had like the versions of Nena Cherry on Top of the Pops.
And that's who I'd watched growing up. Yeah. I adored.
But like, it wasn't, I agree. I remember Ellie Goulding talking to me when I got pregnant and I had the baby and she was like, how are you doing? And she said she found me quite inspiring. And I was like, oh my God, I'm really struggling. But I didn't want to say that to her. But but that's so interesting. So what did you do?
The second album, we did two singles and just stopped. It was like, right, we'll put that to bed. And then I ended up having him early as well, so he was 2 months premature. Right. So he's all in hospital and I wasn't well.
Yeah.
So all that happened. And then Richard's band, The Feeling, signed, and then they were doing really well. And I just felt like, oh my gosh, I've completely lost myself here. And I'd go along to like, you know, parties and stuff like for them and after parties. And obviously I was thrilled for their success. Totally. Like I loved what was happening, but I just felt like people would be like, and with you, you're probably not doing any music anymore because you've got a baby now. And I was like, oh my God, like, of course I love being a mum, but that's not everything. That's not all about me. And I just, I was 25 and just felt a bit like, so I just took my time really. And I remember my dad saying, your third record is the really important one because if you can get past the third, then you've got a career. And if you don't get your third one, if that doesn't see you through, then it's probably time to think about something
else. That's really interesting.
So I do think third records are a bit of a turning point, actually, because if you get beyond your third, you can be like, okay, now I've got a bit of... You just started to build up a bit of meters on the plank.
Totally.
I always think of it as meters on the plank. I would picture myself literally like off a pirate ship, and every time I do another album, I've like... gaffer tapes one more so my plank is quite long but it's really wobbly.
Oh, I love that.
So that's
how many records are you on now?
Not as many as I should be, probably. I started this record in 2020 and it's just coming out now, so I kind of missed a bit. So I did, this is number 6, but I did a orchestral greatest hits, which I could really recommend if you want to spend loads of money on an album. But it was really fun. I'm
definitely going to do that.
You make it a double album, by the way.
Also, you've got a bloody greatest hits. That's amazing.
It was actually really incredible, but at the time I felt like it was like being on Grand Designs where they knock everything down and then they're like, well, this is our budget, and then they make the kitchen like a little bit nice, and you're like, well, now the rest of the house has to match the kitchen.
Yeah, totally.
So you're like, well, I've got timpani and harp on that one, so I can't really. I think we're going to need that on all the others as well. But the nice thing was that I toured it with an orchestra and went to like do theatre tours, and I took my then 4-month-old baby Mickey. So this was my fifth baby. Mm. I was 39, and I felt brilliant, and I think I'm lucky because when I have a baby, I feel like I've done something incredibly clever. Mm. Like, it just feels like, check me out, I had a baby. Mm. And I think that not everybody's lucky enough to experience those hormones, that rush. Mm. And I know that's something you've spoken about feeling as well. Mm. Am I in a room where you've given birth?
Sadly not.
Okay.
It's directly below you. Okay. It's the basement room. But I have spilt amniotic fluid on many a sisal rug, which is a bugger to get out, I tell you. But yeah, no, I've had two babies at home.
Which is magical.
Yeah.
So lovely.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
I know it's not always magical, but your experience of it sounds incredible.
I was very lucky. I had three really incredible births and maybe slightly trickier time postnatally. In just with the breastfeeding was just such a fucker on everyone, and I felt like a failure, and I felt like on the second one I was going to get it right and it was going to be like my thing that I got right, and then it still didn't work, and then the third one I was like, I'm going to try again, I'm going to try and get it right. My boobs just don't give enough milk. And then I was like, you know what, I've made peace with it, sod it, God bless formula.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
So that was kind of, yeah, I had very
you put yourself
beautiful, easy pressure pregnancies and births. But my postnatal was slightly kind of trickier. But, you know, it's like everyone has their different journey, don't they? But
they definitely do. And I think breastfeeding is one of those things that we're so told is such an important thing. And then you feel like everybody else is just nailing it and you're the one who's struggling. And I know that with my second, I had to stop because I just didn't have enough milk for him. Yeah, it was really stressful.
But then it was okay for the others.
Yes, but I mean, even my third, I had to get this woman come round and she was lovely. You know when you get those people who come round and they're really patient with you and you want to just hug them because they've actually just... Because I can clearly remember having friends come round to visit Ray and me gripping the arm of the sofa as he was feeding because it was so painful. Oh. And I just thought, I can't let anyone know because I'm supposed to be like in this like little bubbly, like here I am in my gym jams with my new baby. And I was just squeezing the arm of the chair and gritting my teeth.
God.
And thinking, I hope I'm not conveying in my face how much this
you
is
poor
hurting
thing.
Right now. It's full on. But the woman did help and we managed to keep going actually.
That's great.
But it doesn't matter because I always say, you know, you can't, it's like you walk into a room for grown-ups and you go, well, that one and that one were breastfed till they were one.
Exactly.
That's a formula baby grown up there. It just doesn't matter. And there's a reason why people have spent time working out what formula will really help build babies.
Totally. You know?
Take it. It's good.
And I'm kind of, you know, I was always under the, I don't know about you, and I'm potentially we'll get people talking and telling me facts, but I was so worried that their immune systems would be shit because that was kind of like the story you got told that like breast is best and all this and like they're all bloody the same. They all get as many bloody colds as each other and all of them have had different amounts. They're absolutely fine. They're thriving.
Yeah.
They're
also, good. Baby humans, they lick everything.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry, they're building up immunity every day.
How is it in your household? Have you got any? Is this a terrible thing to say because potentially it's all? Any colds in the house at the moment? Is it just, this is
actually,
the thing.
Actually, no.
Touch wood. I shouldn't have said it. Touch wood. Because that is wild how it just kind of, the thing of having more than one is, more than two, that it just carries on. It's
although
like past the parcel.
The thing I get most worried about is the times when knits have been introduced to our family.
Oh my God, don't knits!
Have seven heads. Firstly, it's bloody expensive, and also it just seems. And we had that thing where we haven't got knits at the moment, by the way, just to clarify. But we've had that thing where you have what you think of as like super knits who don't seem to respond to any treatment.
Oh, super knits.
Yeah, and then I get a bit like my mum was like this as well. I get quite like excited when you comb them out, and you're 31,
it's 32.
I sort of marvel at these actual bugs coming out of my kid's hair.
But I would get them too.
Oh yeah,
and we both have quite long hair.
Yeah.
And at one point, I was ready to like.
It's a bloody nightmare.
Nightmare.
Yeah.
My husband is not only great at lighting a fire, he's also really patient and good at combing knits through. Even though I quite enjoy it.
He can sell that talent. He can monetize that ability.
He is really good. And I am not. I'm like, they're like, Mom, it's hurting. I'm like, come on, let's go. And
my mum
is really methodical. And that is.
Mm.
quite a gift.
Yeah. Have you? This is probably going too far. Have you ever had it? I've had it.
Worms?
Where I was going to say, where I've done a gig and I've met, like, you know, you have like a meet and greet and you'll cuddle a fan and you'll think, I'm possibly giving them nits at the moment.
That's amazing. Don't you always? That's amazing. Don't you always worry when you're getting your hair styled that they're going to tell you that you've got nits?
That would be terrible, wouldn't it?
That would be mortifying.
Mortifying.
Imagine.
I think everybody's hopefully too polite in that situation.
Oh, my God. How many people... And now I'm itching my hair.
Sorry. Oh, is any, we,
how
I
many
know
people
we're free,
have you...
infected.
Given, yeah, I mean...
And why didn't they die out in the pandemic? Why did they keep going?
Oh, my God, you're so right.
Yeah, why was the lack of contact not enough to just stop that? I really thought that would be the end of that.
Fucking gross.
They are so gross.
And don't they come out in the like in September that's like their peak time?
Really?
I think it's like September's like when they really are fucking going for it.
Or when all the kids get back together after the summer holidays.
Gross.
Well, let's move on to something nicer.
Okay.
What do you hope your kids inherit from you?
Like joy of eating.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Joy of eating.
Do they all at the moment like their food?
They're very different in what they like. And I need my middle one to embrace cheese. It's driving me crazy.
Ooh, I've got one that doesn't like potatoes. That's fun. I mean, how?
How interesting.
A potato's so inoffensive.
Well, my kids gag at mashed potato.
Oh, okay. Mashed potatoes, love. Anyway.
Yeah, and quite convenient too.
Really convenient.
I need my son to embrace cheese, not just on pizza. I need him to embrace like a strong cheddar.
Oh yeah.
I hope they inherit from me ambition, like the sense that they can do anything. My daughter, I've never been prouder than when she said, "When I'm older, I'm going to have 3 jobs like mummy." And I was like, "Okay, great."
Did she
great.
Say what they are?
She said makeup artist.
Nice.
Vet.
Oh, good.
And what was the other one that she wanted to be? I think nurse.
Oh,
so I'm like,
things.
Cool.
Nurturing.
I said, probably go with the makeup artist, babe. To be honest, you'll get a better rate. They're really... They're wicked. I'm very proud of them. And, like, there's nothing better than... I've said it already on this, but I'm a bit of a sergeant major, but I'm particularly a sergeant major about manners.
Mm.
It's like when they get taken something, I'm like, "What do you say?" And they go, "Thank you." The little baby go, "Thank you." And it's just like,
no, but that matters.
I'm obsessed with it.
I'm a bit like that too.
Because I'm like, they're free and
they also
go
everything
so
feels
far.
So much better.
Yeah.
When my teenager, my 14-year-old, everything he says, like, "Do this or something." I'm like, "If you put please on the end, I want to help you."
Yeah,
and I feel that glow. Otherwise, I just feel like I'm sort of his PA or something.
But don't you feel the payoff is really wonderful when you see them with other people and you see them using the manners? And I'm
or
like,
someone says we had them for a play date and they were really polite.
Yeah.
Oh
my God, it's best. There's no greater feeling.
No, it's lovely that.
And that started to happen, and I'm like, oh thank God,
that's
it's
lovely.
It's been worth it. But I just hope they have good manners.
I know that it's not, you know, always. I'm not saying the struggle or the challenge is eliminated.
I feel
now.
I've really moaned on this podcast. I'm
not
really
at all.
Sorry. Okay,
no,
fine.
No
okay.
Moaning. What I was actually thinking is, from when you had your first and you were on tour and you were finding it all challenging and a bit clunky, do you feel, because I think there's a lot to be said for getting older as a woman in music. I've really enjoyed. I thought when I was younger and looking at people my age, I was like, poor then.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, no, this is the really good bit.
Yeah.
And I think when you're on stage and you've got your band and your dancers and you're doing a thing, is there a bit of you that just goes, oh my God, this feels so much more exciting and empowering than that, you know, 6 years ago, Jesse, doing that tour?
I appreciate it so much. The fact that I get this release that, especially because I've kind of taken more pride and focused in on the live show. Like if we're using the live show as an example, that feeling And when I had my daughter and son on the side of the stage, I was nearly welling up because I was like, my two worlds are here colliding and I'm in a great place. and I have these amazing fans out there, but I also have my two little people there. And, like, yeah, I was nearly sobbing and just kind of almost wanted to just perform the whole show to them. Yeah, I do feel as I get older, I'm more comfortable in my skin, in my body, in myself, as a parent. It's, yeah, I feel actually like I'm getting better as an artist, which is an amazing feeling.
And do you still write letters to your kids on their birthdays?
I do.
That's so nice. I mean,
they're in a book, and I'm really pissed off with the book that I got my son because it's not very nice. I'm actually going to... this is something that is just such a stupid hang-up to have. I'm going to...
Remove all the letters?
No, I'm going to... No, I'm going to cover it. You remember how you used to do with, like... That's you nice. Put, like, wrapping paper on?
Yeah.
I'm going to do something with it because it's really upsetting me what it is. But I've written all these letters in there. So, yeah, they've all got a book.
That's so nice.
And hopefully they will turn into two books because I'll write them such long letters. But, yeah, it's something that my friends, the parents, they read this letter to her on her 21st birthday, and it was like of her 16th one, and it was just so funny. And I just thought, all those things that you wish you could remember about your kid. It's also quite selfishly for me, I think, probably, to not that I look at them, but to remember those.
So is that what you do?
Those
say,
moments.
Oh, this year you did this. And...
Yeah, and this year you were really into this, and like, oh, you said the best thing when you said this, and aww, you really, I don't know, because I probably would forget it otherwise. So
that's so lovely.
It's nice for them to be able to have those memories of themselves, which I probably won't be able to remember when I give them to them when they're 21.
No, I think that's really spectacular. And is 19 too late to start?
No, I think you may as well just start.
Okay. He's going to be really surprised by this essay he's going to get from his mum. But I'm trying to remember everything.
Yeah, I guess you, because he's 19 now. It's like, would you do it for his 30th?
Yeah, and I'd be like, your first word was duck, but it might have been bus. One of you was definitely bus. Yeah, it's all going to be hazy. And they all look very similar as babies, which doesn't help.
Oh, man.
The photos are kind of like interchangeable.
That's really funny. I'm really crap at photo albums. That's something I'm really shit at. So that's the thing that I'm going to do is just write them these letters.
I think the letters are lovely.
Thank you.
I think it's a lovely tradition, and I wish I'd done the same.
That's, yeah, it's. I have to keep it up now because I know it's a good tradition. So we also do this thing that I inherited from E.L. James, which, because we used to work together, you know, 50 Shades.
Mm.
We worked together in a production company before I was a singer, before she was a big erotic fiction writer.
Mm.
And she used to take photos, Polaroids, of the family each year and put them on the tree at Christmas. And we're doing that too, which I quite like that one. So we've got loads of Polaroids of each year.
Yeah, that's really lovely.
And you hang them on the... These are two traditions. I'm not very good with traditions, but those are two traditions that I do.
So I'm glad you took that tradition from her rather than writing... Well, I suppose you can.
Imagine me writing erotic
I've taken
letters
from
to
I'm
my gonna... children. Were you a bit worried where that was going, Sophie?
Stick with the Polaroids. It's all good. That was such good fun chatting to Jessie. So much energy, and I love it where there's that nice crossover. And yes, I have realised I've spoken to a lot of singers for the podcast, but it is nice for me because otherwise you don't really get much time speaking to other people in the same job as me. I'm like, quite often when I go to work, I'm the only singer. So it's really, really lovely to be able to share notes and yeah, have a good kind of natter about daftness of our day job, but also the daftness of that combined with motherhood as well, and all the different hats you put on. Which, I mean, the good news is there's never a dull moment, so that's great. It's definitely not a boring life I lead, but it is a busy one. And now, where do we find ourselves? Well, it's kind of quite a nice day. I think we're going to stay close to home today. We had like some ideas of some plans, but actually, because I'm about to go away for a couple of weeks, I just want some quiet family time here, really. Mooch around, play in the park, might have a little wander in the park, and then one of my kids really wants to go to Sainsbury's to see if they have Prime. Are you aware of this Prime drink? It seems to send them crazy. It's like, I don't mean by drinking it, because actually that's a rarity. It's very hard to get hold of, but just the idea of the Prime drink is a really big deal.
I'd say, to my 7, 10 and 14-year-old. They were all kind of captivated by it. So what Prime is a drink that's made by and promoted by a YouTuber called KSI. And basically they do these drops where you can get them for about 2 seconds in a couple of places. I think it's Sainsbury's and Asda. And then a lot of them get bought up and then sold with hiked up prices on eBay or on local corner shops or whatever. But these guys, wow, they just want the Prime, and there's loads of flavours. And from what I understand, they don't really like the way it tastes that much, but that is not the point. Anyway, I'm sure there was an equivalent when I was little, but I can only remember Garbage Pail Kids. No, is that what I mean? Yeah, Garbage Pail Kids. Cards you collect, which came with a free bit of chewing gum in the packet. I used to love those, but I don't remember going crazy for it, and I definitely don't think there was a black market on them. But, you know, maybe I was a naive child, maybe there was a wild side to collecting Garbage Pail Kid cards, just like Prime. Anyway, the next time I speak to you, it'll be while I'm on the road, so I'll let you know how it's all going. But in the meantime, hope you're doing all right. Be kind to yourself as ever, and, yeah, I'll see you soon. And if you see any Prime, can you please let me know and do me a good deal on it? All right, thanks very much. Lots of love. Bye, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.